Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a board member for Pardes. This week, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Bereishit. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Our listenership continues to grow through your help. And please let us know your comments about the podcast. Write us at podcasts@pardesusa.org. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
I hope that everyone had a wonderfully uplifting Sukkot holiday. I apologize for the fact that we did not have a podcast during the Sukkot vacation, but I am happy that we will now be resuming our podcasts and be in full force for the rest of this year. This week we are starting the new cycle of Torah reading with Parshat Bereishit, and I would like to examine chapter 1, which is generally seen as the first creation story. In chapter 1, we begin with Bereishit bara Elohim et hashamayim v'et haaretz. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. This verse is perhaps the heading for the whole chapter. Interestingly, in the very next verse, it says, V'ha'aretz hayta tohu vavohu, and the earth was chaotic. The section goes on to describe the creation of the earth, the Aretz. And although we do have the introduction which speaks about the creation of heaven and earth, and in fact, on day number 2, the heavens come into existence when there is a separation between the upper waters and the lower waters, the focus of our creation story is really on the earth. The earth, which is the dominion of Adam, of the human being. And we will discuss this further as we go along. This chapter describes a very systematic, incremental, developmental process of creation, where we go from the abstract to the specific. In fact, a major element in this process is separation. And let us examine this further. On day number 1, we're told in chapter 1, verse 4, and God separated between the light and the darkness. On day number 2, in verse 6, God says, let there be a firmament which will separate between waters, between the upper waters and the lower waters. On day number 3, there is a further separation of the waters, which brings into existence the seas, but perhaps even more significantly, the dry land. On day number 4, the original light of creation is further divided into luminaries, into the sun and the moon and the stars. On day number 3, after the dry land has come into existence, there is vegetation that sprouts forth. And when we read verse 11, it says, let vegetation come forth, and trees according to its species. And the idea of according to its species becomes a central motif on day number 3 with the creation of trees. On day number 5, when we have the birds and the fish that are created, each according to their species. On day number 6, when we have the animals created according to its species, the process of separation is a process of individuation. The more things become separated out, the more each thing becomes individuated, and the more the details become very important in creating a beautiful mosaic. And this process of individuation crystallizes on day number 6, when the Adam, in verse 27, is separated into Zachar and Nekeva, male and female. Note the fact that when we speak about the fish and the birds and the animals, we never mention the creation of male and female. It is only with Adam that we make that distinction, because it is not enough to be just an Adam, but you're a particular type of Adam. You're a male, you're a female. Each one is a unique creation. But in this process of separation, of individuation, there is also a parallel process of integration. So that, although there is a separation between heaven and earth, when we look on day number 4, there are luminaries that are created in the heavens to shine on the earth. Although there is a separation between light and darkness, there are luminaries that light up the darkness, the moon and the stars. When we're told of the creation of the birds on the one hand fly on the earth, but are on the face of the firmament of the heaven, in verse 20. And ultimately, when we're told of the creation of the Adam is the one who rules over the fish in the sea, the birds in the heaven, and all of the creatures on the earth. So that these two processes of separation and integration are critical to the creation process. I need to separate to individuate, to be able to acknowledge what is unique about every single aspect, element of creation. And every single element is unique. But at the same time, it is important to see how each element is part of a larger whole, contributes to that whole. I would even add, plays a role which cannot be filled by any other element in creation. So that in the end we cannot be left with individual separate particles, but there needs to be a way to somehow integrate that into a whole. Each individual thing which is created is described as being kitov. God saw the light, kitov, it is good. When God created the dry land, he looked at it, kitov, it is good. Every single thing which is separated out is seen as being tov. But at the end of the sixth day, in verse 31, it says, and God saw all that he had created, and behold, it is tov ma'od, very good. because the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And it's only on the very last day of creation that we have the total picture. The name of God which appears in this chapter is Elohim. According to the rabbinic understanding, Elohim is associated with God's manifestation in nature. Elohim is also associated with the aspect of God that has to do with judgment, law. So that is very appropriate that our chapter should mention Elohim, because our chapter focuses on the natural world, the world that we see, a world which is governed by law, laws of physics, laws of chemistry, biology. Everything which is created in the first 6 days of creation follows a pattern. And that is connected with the name Elohim. Note the two words that occur a number of times in this chapter that have to do with creation. Bara, Asa. Bara, creation ex nihilo, something from nothing. Asa, the finished product. In this chapter, the whole process of creation is going from bara to asa. From an initial creation, something out of nothing, to a finished product. Note that bara appears in three places in this section. In the first verse, which speaks about the creation of heaven and earth, the initial creation of what we might call the elements from which heaven and earth are developed. In verse 21, we're told of a bri'ah, of the taninim hagdolim, of these mythic sea creatures which fill up the waters. And finally, in verse 27, three times the word bara appears, which refers to the creation of Adam, of the human being. The Adam who's created B'Tselem Elohim, which is in effect saying that the creation of Adam is a unique creation. I will come back to this in a moment. The word Asa appears a number of times. And maybe let me just note too. In verse 7 it says, Vaya'as Elohim et harakia. And God made the firmament to separate between the upper waters and the lower waters. And then in verse 5, God called the Rakia Shamayim. Day number 2 focuses on the creation of Shamayim. All that we know is that there is water in this place. We're not given too many details. The word Asa tells us that this is something which has been made into a finished product. The heavens are somehow in their final stage. If we look at chapter 2, verse 3, it says, Asher bara Elohim la'asot, which God created to do. In that verse, it seems to be saying that creation is not finished, but is in a process of being finished. And perhaps that refers to the creation of the Aretz, where it is the role of Adam to complete the creation. to make it into a final product. I mentioned a moment ago, Adam is created. Bitzelem Elohim, in the image of God. Three times we're told of he was created, bara. What is this image of God? Numerous explanations have been given, and I will suggest a few. One explanation is the power of speech. This is a central aspect of God that's reflected in chapter 1. God creates the world through speech. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. "Let there be a firmament," and there was a firmament. So that being in the image of God means that Adam has the power of speech, but a power of speech which is a creative power. Second explanation, Tzelem Elohim refers to the power of reason, analytical skills, logic. God creates the world in chapter 1 in a very systematic way, in a very logical progression. It is this quality that God then gives to the Adam, to be God-like. Third interpretation, Tzelem Elohim has to do with free will. God makes the determination as to what will be created. There is nothing that binds God. And it is that ability, a free will, which God confers upon the Adam. But I would like to suggest now a fourth explanation, which I think encompasses the other three. And that is Tzelem Elohim has to do with majesty, empowerment. When God creates the world, this is an expression of God's majesty. We say in the Tefillah, Koneh HaKol, which could be translated as, God, you acquired everything. But obviously the question is, who did God acquire it from? So that a more accurate translation would be, you possess everything. You own everything. By virtue of what does God own everything? By virtue of creation. The act of creation gives God ownership, gives God majesty. God has a claim on the world by virtue of the fact that God brought it into existence. And it is this quality of majesty, of ownership, of empowerment, which God gives to the Adam when the Adam is created, Bitzelem Elohim. No other creature is Bitzelem Elohim. Because only Adam is given that majesty. And so we see in verse 28, God says to the Adam, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, conquer it, rule over the fish, over the birds, over all of the creatures on the earth. It is that capacity for rule and conquest, which is Tzelem Elohim. It is in that capacity that there is male and female, which are two sides that come together to enable that conquest. It is through those lenses that they are supposed to reproduce, because by reproducing they fill the earth, and by filling the earth, that's what gives them dominion over the earth. So that the creation of Adam is the culmination of this chapter, where God has now created a representative, a delegate, a partner who will now share and develop creation. So that if I go back to a point which I brought up earlier, in chapter 2, verse 3, when it says that God ceased from the work which he had created to do, asher bara la'asot, there is the idea that whatever God created is the springboard for further creation, which will be actualized by the Adam. The role of the Adam is to take what God has created and develop it to its full potential. This is the meaning of Tzelem Elohim. When we look at the creation story, it is very interesting to note that the 6 days of creation can be paired up. Day number one goes together with day number four, two with five, three with six. How so? On day number one, God creates the light and makes this gross separation between day and night, light and darkness. On day number four, God develops that further, splits that original abstract light into luminaries, the sun and the moon and the stars. And what God does is to bring light into the darkness, because the sun illuminates the day, but the moon and the stars illuminate the night. So that the separation between light and darkness is modified, so that even in the darkness there is light. Perhaps I should also add a very interesting rabbinic comment, which says that the original light of creation did not exist after this day, but was kept for the righteous in the world to come. And is based on the fact that the idea of me'orot, of luminaries, means me'orot, from the light, but with the idea being that when the separation process is made, the whole, in fact, is greater than the sum of the parts. So that the original light of creation was broken down, but something was lost. And perhaps I would add, it's not that something was lost, but in order to create a world in which Adam exists, you cannot have such intensive light. You need to have the light somehow being mitigated, being modified, so that we have only a fraction of that light during the day and some of it at night. Day number two, we have the separation of the waters. On day number five, we have the creatures that inhabit those waters, the fish and the birds. And not only that, but we have these mythic creatures who seem to be somehow parallel to the Adam, because they are also bara, the special creation, ex nihilo. And it would seem to be that these taninim perhaps may also reflect a certain concept of empowerment. Note, by the way, that on day number four, when we spoke of the lights also are described as being empowered. This is in verse 16 and then 18. They rule over the day and night. And according to a rabbinic understanding, they rule over our lives. And this can get you into the whole question of astrology. And then we have day number three and day number six. On day number three, we have the creation of the dry land, the creation of the vegetation. And in day number six, we have the creation of the animals and the people who inhabit that land. And although there is an element of dominion on day number four, in terms of the luminaries, and on day number five, perhaps in terms of these taninim gdolim, although it never actually uses the expression of rule, ultimately, rule is given to Adam. In verse 28. Because the Adam is the ultimate ruler of this world. He is the one that is given the rule to somehow integrate all the different elements, to make it into a whole. Into a whole which can be described as Tov Ma'ot. I want to end with the first three verses of chapter 2. It is very interesting that these are the first three verses of chapter 2. The division of the Tanakh into chapters is something which occurred in the Middle Ages, a creation of Christian monks. And it's very interesting that the Christian monks saw the seventh day of creation as beginning chapter 2. In a traditional Jewish understanding, these three verses are part of the first creation story, are really the end of chapter 1. And hence, the first Aliyah includes these three verses. I would like to suggest a few linguistic reasons and a conceptual reason to explain the Jewish linking of the seventh day of creation of the Sabbath to the first creation story. First, the name of God which appears in those three verses is Elohim, the same name of God which appears in the rest of the first chapter. Note, from verse 4, chapter 2, verse 4 onwards, all of a sudden we have a different name or names, which is Hashem Elohim. And it is this name, Hashem Elohim, which characterizes the second chapter. Secondly, when verse 3 ends with Bara Elohim Lasot, it closes the beginning of the chapter. The opening verse is Bereshit Bara Elohim. Subsequently, in verse 6 or 7, it says Vayas Elohim. So that these two words of creation, Bara La'asot, are very much part of chapter 1. In chapter 2, we have a different word used for creation, which is Vayitzer. Verse 19. Vayiven. Verse 22. So that both the name of God and the words for creation would seem to indicate that this should be part of chapter 1. Now for the conceptual explanation. In these three verses, we're told about what came into existence on the seventh day. And basically, nothing was created. What is created? Shabbat, which literally means cessation, stopping. Note the word for work which appears in verse 2. Twice. The word that appears is melacha. It says, God ended on the seventh day the melacha which he did. He ceased on the seventh day from all the melacha which he did. And once again, he did. What is melacha? The rabbis understand melacha as being creative work. There's another word for work, which actually appears in chapter 2, and that is avodah. What is the difference between these two words? Avodah is, the root of avodah is eved, servant. Melacha, I would like to suggest, is related to the word melech, king. And therefore, in the spirit of what I have been saying in this podcast, the work which God has been doing during the 6 days is a reflection of God's majesty, God's kingship. On the seventh day, God ceases from doing that. Later on, we know that we are told to rest on the Sabbath day, to not do melacha, and basically to emulate what God did during the original creation story. I would like to end with the following idea. By God stopping to work on the seventh day, God ultimately reflected his majesty. And what do I mean by that? By stopping to work, God showed that ultimately he is in control of his creation and not vice versa. And I would like to illustrate this with a story of my own experience. A number of years ago, I met someone close to me who I hadn't seen in a long time. And as we were reminiscing about what we each do, this relative of mine said, I work 7 days. And when I asked him, wouldn't you like to take a day off? Without even talking about Shabbat, the Sabbath. And saying, don't you feel you need to take a day off? The response was, I can't. It's a rat race. If I take a day off, I'll be done in by my competition. So I have to work 7 days in order to be able to beat the competition. And at that moment, I understood in a very profound way what it means to be a slave to your job. The idea that if I take off, I feel my whole world will collapse, that ultimately my job rules me. Shabbat is saying, you are in control of creation. You can stop working on Shabbat and go back to work on Sunday, and the world won't fall apart because you control the world, not vice versa. By God resting on Shabbat, ceasing, God showed that God decides when to turn it on, God decides when to turn it off. God is in control of his creation and not vice versa. So that, for me, this is why these verses very much are part of chapter 1. If chapter 1 emphasizes the majesty, then God also is trying to show people, I rested on the Sabbath. you rest on the Sabbath. By resting on the Sabbath, you truly show your majesty, because you show that you are in control of your creation and not vice versa. This is perhaps a paradox, which I think is worth thinking about. The more that I assert myself, the more that I have to demonstrate that I am in control, the more in reality I am not in control. But if I don't have to constantly be holding on, but I can let go, that shows that I also have the confidence that when I let go, I won't lose it. It won't fall apart. And that ultimately I really am in control of the situation. So that Shabbat is an appropriate culmination of the creation story. Because Shabbat, paradoxically, shows that by stopping to work, we ultimately set the limits of our creation and demonstrate our control over it. This is an important lesson to us, which can have many ramifications, to realize that someone who is really in control does not have to constantly be making the point, but they also have to know when to let up, when to make space, and to not feel that by doing that, they are somehow giving up something. On the contrary, there is only a gain for everyone around. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.